This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hour two as we roll along this morning. Spent a lot of time in hour one talking about Thursday night football because it was terrible. We are going to get to some other games coming up this weekend. We've also got Matt Mershell coming up this hour. Some interesting games in college football. We've been talking earlier this week about TCU and Kansas, that game going on in Lawrence. Sort of a big surprise of these two teams. They were picked to finish at the beginning, bottom of half of the Big 12 by the preseason predictors, you know, the media that does its polls during media days in the summer. And then all of a sudden, surprise, TCU is unbeaten, Kansas is unbeaten, and game day is going to be arriving in Lawrence. But Texas and Oklahoma are going to play this weekend. Tennessee is in Baton Rouge as well. There are a couple of other really good games in college football. Matt Mershell will give us an idea of where the sport is going in terms of this week in week number six. But we'll also get back into week number five because London is calling for the Giants and the Packers. That'll be kicking off on Sunday. Still evaluating Daniel Jones. Brian Daboll has a quarterback conundrum because Tyrod Taylor is out. So Daniel Jones has been working. The starter had left the game with an ankle injury in the game against the Bears and then had to come back because Taylor had a head injury. Taylor is not available, so they've been working through Daniel Jones this week to see if he'll be better enough to play in the game in London, and he seems to be making progress this week. Now, if you liked Bailey Zappe for the New England Patriots against the Green Bay Packers, you'll probably love him against the Detroit Lions because he is likely going to start. But the Patriots are playing that little dance thing where Brian Hoyer, the number two guy, he got a head injury as well. He is out. He's on the IR. Mac Jones is still dealing with a high ankle sprain, and he is still possible because Belichick likes to do that. But it is all likelihood Bailey Zappe, the rookie out of Western Kentucky, is going to get the start for the Patriots. But there's one other reason to watch. It's not just because they're playing the Lions, who put up 35 points a game and give up a lot of points, is that the Patriots, for the first time in a decade, are going to be wearing their throwback red Minuteman helmets and jerseys. It's going to be a feeling from the 80s, before they made the switch to what they are now in the 90s. But it's going to have a nice little throwback feel this weekend. But the Lions can score. Jared Goff has thrown 11 touchdowns. He's tied with Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes for the most in the league. But the defense is almost non-existent. They give up 35 and a half points per game. All right, Good, the Bad, and the Dumb coming up next. Matt Mershell coming up in this hour. Thanks for being with us. It is Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
Getting into the weekend strong with the good, the bad, and the dumb. Let's get things rocking and rolling. The good of the day.
The good of the day. Tony, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Have we ever had a good that doesn't really make us feel good?
No, I don't think so.
We've always had goods that made us feel good,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right, right.
Well, I mean, this is good, but I don't know if it'll make us feel good.
Okay.
Boston Dynamics, you know that company that's behind all the robots we always talk
yes.
about?
Yes.
Has pledged not to make robots that can kill us and is wanting other companies to do the same.
Oh. How do they prevent that from happening?
Well, they just did an open letter. Saying,
oh,
you know, let's...
But,
let's,
I mean, how do they do it technically?
That don't want to kill us? I guess yeah. not weaponizing them.
Oh, okay.
I mean, they could probably kill us still with brute strength.
I thought the purpose of AI was that it would be on its own. It would know. It would be like, what?
Right.
I'm so smart. I'm tapping into all the resources.
Maybe not provide guns around them. You know, said maybe it's Nerf guns. And I mean, I'm going to assume maybe AI doesn't know the difference just yet.
Right.
But that's what
I saw.
I mean, it's good that they're getting out in front of this, but at the same time, I wasn't really concerned.
Do you remember the movie Real Genius?
Of course.
Remember how great? That was a fun movie,
that
wasn't
was a
it?
Great movie.
It was a 1980s movie, for those of you who don't know. It starred Val Kilmer. And the whole thing was, it was this guy who was super smart. He worked in the field of lasers. And they were working on this special laser, but unbeknownst to them, their professor was selling that to a defense contractor. Right? So
yeah.
What they realized was they had invented something that could vaporize a target from space. And so they tried to stop it. And it was kind of a fun movie. Really smart guys. Laszlo was somebody famous, though.
Uncle Rico.
That's right. Laszlo, who played the really smart recluse that was hidden in the walls. He was Uncle Rico.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're here for that, for those things like that.
Yeah, because so, the first time I heard that, I had to watch Real Genius again. It's like, I can't picture
absolutely.
That. Are you kidding me?
And so I'm bringing that up because Elon Musk was talking. I saw this little like documentary on YouTube about AI that scared the hell out of me, by the way. And Elon Musk was talking to people and they were talking about drones and they were talking about how they invented these drones that can just zip like so fast. And Elon Musk just quickly points out, you could create assassin drones right now. He goes, you have the technology. He goes, you have the technology to put a face recognition software in that drone that could, and attach it to an explosive that could fly into an office anywhere in the world, zip right to that individual and explode.
No,
and I went, oh my God, he's right.
Think about this. I know you saw it. The drone footage of Wrigley Field.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I mean, I sat back and I was like, I cannot believe that this is absolutely amazing. I couldn't take my eyes off of it. But at the same time, in the back of my mind was just that. Was like, look how effortlessly it's flying through buildings.
Right. It's just...
Like, it's going down hallways like it's nothing.
Nothing. Absolutely. So, when they say, like, we won't... AI might just go, yeah, you told us not to, but we're smart enough now to know what to do.
Well, I mean, they... This is what they said, and I quote, we believe that adding weapons to robots that are remotely or autonomously operated, widely available to the public, and capable of navigating to previously inaccessible locations where people live and work, raises new risks of harm and serious ethical issues.
It's so terrible that we are inventing something that could, through...
Wipe us out.
Like, it could, but it also could cure cancer. It also could find solutions to food problems or any other major issue. These AI machines can process information so quickly and so much more advanced. They can run through scenarios constantly, 24 hours a day, to come up with solutions to our issues. And the number one thing is, yeah, but they can also kill us and kill us easily. Like, it would... Yeah, it's such a complex issue. Because, man, wouldn't it be great to wake up one day and AI has found a cure for cancer, like
yeah,
I said,
of course.
Or anything, or Lou Gehrig's disease, or Alzheimer's, or whatever. But at the same time, they could go, and at the same time, we're taking out half of you because we don't like the way you look. So, all right,
it's good that they're
It is good
saying,
that they are committing
Let's
to
not
this.
Do this.
Right?
But at the same time, we're still going to be making robots that can probably do this. Just we're not going to weaponize them.
Well, you know, the only thing that can stop a bad robot with a gun is a good robot with a gun.
We need to find good robots.
Oh, goodness. All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day goes to all the people who felt the need to point out that the Denver Nuggets mascot, Rocky, makes about 3 times more than the average WNBA player.
Is this a true thing, though? I saw that this might be fake news. Does he make $600,000 a year?
That's what I've been reading.
He might. I have no idea.
The way I look at it, this is that the NBA just throws money away.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you look at some of these salaries. They have these gigantic TV deals, and they don't have a whole lot of overhead. It's not like
what
a football
though?
Team has.
I hate to say this. I'm sorry. I hate to say this, but I know so many people that work for teams. They're not making like $500,000 working in media relations. Like when we say that,
right.
we mean the players, and we mean the things.
But isn't Rocky one of those that's really entertaining?
Yo, he's great.
Kind of like the son's gorilla.
He's great, but do you
they
need
go above
the guy?
And beyond?
Do you need the guy to? Can you get him for $300,000? Like, can you get somebody to do it who's athletic? Can you get somebody to do it for $200,000? You know, so like, there are plenty of average salaries within the organization, but that seems like a lot
that
of money.
That does seem like, you know, $500,000.
Yeah, to be a mascot,
$500,000 a year.
40,
that seems...
to work 40 home games and all the publicity things that you do. So it's not just like the games. You'll go to a children's hospital. You'll go to an opening of something. Whoever basically hires you to come, you'll go.
Yeah, grocery store openings.
Yeah, grocery store opening, all of that. It's a lot of money.
Youth camps.
But at the same time, it's not something. It's not somebody that you'd want doing it part time, because you'd want him available all the time for all the things you want to use him for. And he's got to keep in shape, so he's got to be in the gym constantly, keeping his skills up.
I mean, both are believable. I just look at it. I just look at it as like, because it's basketball. I mean, you know, they don't have a whole lot of people that they need to pay. Like, you know, versus football or baseball, where you look at the roster size, and it's like, we got to split it up amongst all these guys.
Look, I make this argument to people all the time, and I it's almost talking to a wall half the time. They'll see a contract and they'll go, like a guy that plays 5 minutes a night, and they go, oh, how could that guy make $5 million a year? And I'm like, because even though he's playing 5 minutes a night, he's one of like 200 of the best basketball players in the world.
Yeah,
like that's what this is. Like you think. Like you're a working guy, 9 to 5. You meet the 12th man on an NBA team and who never plays, and you think you have something in common. You have nothing in common with him. Nothing. His path to where he is and your path to where you are completely different. Up until the moment he was the 12th guy on the bench for an NBA team, he was the best basketball player everywhere he has been.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's amongst people that are better than he is, but he's still one of the best in the world. And you're right, with 15 guys on a roster, 13 guys on a roster, depending on what you keep, you're not paying that many multi-million-dollar contracts.
No.
You know, it's not like football. You're
not
right.
Not football where you got a 53-man roster, baseball. Or baseball, you got 25-man. I mean, yeah, baseball's more.
Yeah,
you got minor league players, you know, some of the minor league players that you have signed to long-term deals because you try to lock them in a little bit longer because of what they could be.
But if you're Rocky and you're making $600,000 a year, that's a good gig. You better bank that.
You
better bank that.
You should never give. Yeah,
never. You got to keep that up. You got to keep up all the flips and the things that you do. But yeah, Rocky. What, I saw the list. It was like the gorilla in Phoenix was like middle of that pack. I thought the Phoenix gorilla would be number one. If I didn't see that list and you said who's the top paid NBA mascot, I would have said the Phoenix Gorilla.
I mean, maybe with new ownership that he'll write the ship about it.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, I always think of like the most athletic mascot's got to be the Phoenix Gorilla.
Right, exactly. Because he's like the San Diego Chicken of NBA mascots, isn't he? I mean, he's like he's great. So, but yeah. I knew a guy that was the Rays mascot like in the early 2000s. He did when I was in minor league basketball. He did our stuff, and he was a Rays mascot, and he was.
I mean, when you think about it, even if you're just if you're not making $500,000 as a mascot, if you're making like $50,000, $60,000 as a mascot, what a great job!
What a good job!
You're just a mascot. But see, the other reason why I say this is believable because I remember we did a story a while back on the floor sweeper.
Yes, and I couldn't believe that
the floor sweeper makes about $80,000 a year.
I couldn't buy that. I was like, "There's no way you could get somebody for $10 an hour to do that."
Yeah, but maybe not.
But maybe you're right. Maybe you can't. Or maybe there's a special way you have to.
Or maybe it's kind of like maybe it's like the government, where the government will overspend because if they don't spend the allotted money that they have, then they lose it.
That might be it. That might be
it. Could be that too. I don't know.
Like they put it in some taxable way, right? Yeah. But you're right, because you could say to a guy, a young person, hey, we'll give you $20 an hour, or we'll pay you $200 a night, right? You get to go to every game, sit right up there. And your job is to sweep the floor, and we'll give you a couple $100 a night. You can get somebody to do it rather than putting them on payroll and all of that. But yeah, I looked into that story and I was like, my God, it's true.
Yeah.
So this is probably true as well. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
I got two.
All right.
You know, I mean, they're both kind of quick. One is just fun, and I had to bring it up. But the first one is that Adam Silver basically had to come out yesterday and ask teams not to tank for Victor Wembanyama.
Yeah, we're going to have to start getting to know his name. He's on my highlights every morning. Every day I'm seeing this kid.
Is it
7'5" that can hit threes?
Is it Wembanyama? I don't know. This is what Adam Silver said. I know that many of our NBA teams are salivating at the notion that potentially through our lottery they can get him. So they should all still compete very hard next season.
Okay, what makes this guy different than Yao Ming, LeBron James, anybody else that was coming in as the solid, absolute number one? Yeah. You are tanking for this dude that the NBA has had for years and years and years.
There's always a guy. 7'5", but can actually move with
seven,
the ball.
7'5", that can hit threes. He's amazing. He's amazing.
Who dribbles the ball up the court like a point guard? And it looks like a point guard when he's dribbling it. I mean, actually has the handles of like what Steph Curry has.
This is a guy you would create in a video game. If they had create a player, you'd be like, I want him to be 7'5", and agility of a point guard, and dominate the paint, and he can hit threes.
Well, I mean, to take the dub even further, his agent has let everyone know that he's been reached out by a couple of NBA teams saying, hey, can you do us a favor, shut him down?
Don't let him play anymore. Just because you don't want him to get hurt.
That'll hurt his draft. And
he falls hard.
Yeah, but he's like, no, I will never be able to get Victor to do that because Victor's a competitor. He wants to play.
Yeah,
which is the right thing for an agent to say.
Right, but deep down, he's probably like, you don't have to do this anymore.
Yeah, you can go half speed now. You already showed what you got.
You're done. Just sit back and enjoy the fruits of your labor, young man, because come June next year.
Come join Ron on the couch and watch Major League Baseball playoffs. Yep, that's how you got to live your life for the next, eight months?
That's right. What's the second dumb of the day?
The second dumb of the day is this new conspiracy theory that's floating around out there.
I love conspiracy theories,
but I mean, it's so out there. That's why I had to bring it up. Because it's centered around Tom and Giselle's impending divorce.
Yes.
And basically what it is that Giselle is a white witch.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. She's like casting spells and stuff?
Yeah. She cast a spell that protected Tom's body and enhanced his athletic abilities and gave him potions that allowed him to freeze time. The agreement between Brady and his witch wife was that she'd support his athletic endeavors, and in exchange, he'd retire at age 45, which is the tarot number for making positive life changes.
This is great.
You want to come back with this?
Yeah, can we come back with this?
Because it's a little longer.
Oh, I'm intrigued by this now. The depths people will go. All right, we'll come back with this crazy story when we come back on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, so I am really fascinated with this. I ended up Googling. We did the good, the bad, and the dumb, and towards the end there was a dumb that there are witches who say that Tom Brady married a white witch who gave him powers beyond normal men, and now those powers are being sucked away because his agreement was to retire at 45. And he did not. This is great. This is so fascinating.
And it's right. Oh, I believe this more than I believe that Tom Brady left for the Masked Singer.
And that's because the people are saying how awful he looks. I'm like, yeah, he looks like the guy in Thinner.
Oh, my God.
Thinner.
That one press conference when you just sat there, you're like, what happened to him?
His cheeks are caved in.
Yeah. Well, now we know why.
Like, I never looked like that in my 40s, ever. Like, no matter what I did, I ran, I exercised. Yep. I never looked fit. My body at a certain age went, nah, we're done. We're storing fat for the winter, young man, no matter what you do. We're keeping this right in here. And Brady looks horrible. I mean, he looks terrible. He looks he doesn't look plumpy. I can see Giselle conjuring up. She's got a brew.
Yeah.
She's got a locket of his hair, plopped it into the pot, spotting around, bat's wings in there.
I'm just picturing, like, you know, maybe it's more like the witch in Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, right.
The Beast, you know, when the prince denied the old hag, and then she turned into a beautiful woman and was like, nope, you're going to be a monster now.
And that's what he's doing. He's just
taking it away from him.
That's right.
Like, you know, we had a deal. We had a pact.
So
probably a blood pact.
So this is again, conspiracy theories are fun and they're a little crazy. It depends on how far you take them, right? So this isn't just somebody conjuring this up. This is like real people who believe they're witches making these, like, on TikTok.
Right.
Like people who are like, well, I know because I'm a witch too and I know what's going down. So it's not just something people are just creating. It's like people who are like believe in this witchcraft and then putting it out there. Oh, yeah, yeah. This is great. Like Giselle, she is so livid at him. I mean, it's unbelievable. And it's a story that, you know, I tried to do it this week and I just couldn't get into it because I don't like the marriage part of it. I want to do it more on the football side of it, make it more sporty.
Well, you know,
TMZ,
I think what's going to happen is that we will probably end up talking about it more on Monday. I guess we got to wait and see what Sunday happens.
Yeah, right.
You know, what kind of changes will there be? But I mean, it's fascinating because it's playing out in public right now. I mean, we're just seeing it. We're seeing this dissolve. There's been all these little inklings all over the place, and it just escalated over the summertime.
And I think the people who were really it's in the New York Post every day. I read the New York Post every day, and it's there's a story on this constantly, and I don't. Look, is it a celebrity marriage? Of course. Is it a Hollywood marriage? No, it's a sports modeling marriage. So I don't know how much TMZ-ish, like how many people in that world, you know, like this story, like the Perez Hilton people. You know what I mean? Because it's not like.
But I will,
like
I will
Ryan
argue
Reynolds,
with you.
Blake Lively. Like it's not that.
Right, but I'm going to argue with you and say that it is a Hollywood marriage because everyone has heard of Tom Brady.
When I say Hollywood marriage, hold on. When I say Hollywood marriage, I mean because they reside in that industry.
Oh, okay.
Like when I say Hollywood marriage, I don't mean like Hollywood like as a Hollywood.
Well, they both have acted.
I mean Ryan Reynolds is an actor. Blake Lively is an actress. Okay, they got married. They came together. Like if that was falling apart, that would be a Hollywood marriage. You know, like this is a model dating a quarterback. Like where hasn't this happened in American history? Right. And I don't know if the entertainment people, like the Entertainment Tonight crowd that watches for the latest on who Leo's
Kardashians
dating.
Or
the Kardashians. I don't know how much they're into this marriage. Like, does this sell papers, like the kind of papers that, like, again, Ryan Reynolds would sell?
See, I think
like
it
that.
Does just because of, you know, everyone knows who Brady is.
Right.
He's gone past that. If you're not in football, you know who Tom Brady is.
Yeah,
and I think you know who Giselle is.
Sure. You know, I think I told you, I either say it on the air or off the air. There was one of the political shows, talking head shows, that had no idea Giselle was a major model.
Yeah, you're right.
Because he made a point in the panel that he made kind of a joke that she, how dare she be upset Tom Brady's out there working to give her the lifestyle. And somebody on the panel went, do you know who he's married to? Like, she's worth $1 billion. Like she's not just some runway model that's a dime a dozen. She's one of the top models on the planet
ever
in the history of modeling. She's one of the, like, it's not just, hey, I found myself a Victoria's Secret angel.
Woo-hoo!
One of 25 of them. Like he got the model.
Yeah. Although
like,
I think she was
need
an angel.
His money. He needs her money. he's probably figuring out a way to get a piece of that pie.
There was that little video of, it's an old video of Brady and Gronk laughing.
Right.
And
right.
All the tagline was with it was like, you know, Brady and his lawyers figuring this divorce settlement out.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, you would think about it. It's like, yeah, Brady's about, you know, could he get some of Giselle's money?
Yeah. This, you know what? It goes to Brady's mentality. When I read that book by Seth Wickersham, it really opened my eyes to this guy. This guy loves football on par with other things in his life. Like, I don't want to accuse him of loving it equal to his family, but it's not a distant second, right? Like, you know, like he has this thing where football is so much ingrained in his, it's hard to pull him away from that. But from a sports standpoint, we understood it because we know covering sports that athletes have a hard time walking away from something they're still good at. It's when you're not good at it that it's easier to turn away, right? I watched Matt Ryan last night. He's got no offensive line. He's got no receivers. Jonathan Taylor's out. He looked terrible. I wanted to pull him off the field and go, it's been a good run. End this. You're not going to get any better at this. You're 37. But Brady's like, I led the league in touchdown passes and yards and had my team in the playoffs hosting a game that we lost because we made some mistakes. That happens. But I'm not declining in my skill. Why would I walk away? And she's like, I don't care about that. You're supposed to walk away for your kids and your family. You told me that's what's going to happen, and now you just casually threw that away, and so I'm leaving. Ugh. Matt Michelle joins us next. We'll talk college football, the games that are coming up this weekend as we continue with Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call on SportsMap Radio. All right, we're going to get into the college football games coming up this weekend. Let's go to our Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Visit them for a quote today at progressive.com. One of our favorites, Matt Michelle, Orlando Sentinel, to talk some college football. How are you, my friend?
Good. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good, man. All right. TCU in Kansas seems to be the big game. Who would have thought that? But that's the way it is. They are undefeated. I've been following this Kansas team a little bit more. Is this real? I mean, are these two really good teams, or are they just early game winners that caught the attention of the nation?
No, I think these are two really good teams. I think, you know, we've seen some growth. I think a lot more growth than we thought. Maybe Kansas is a little bit ahead of schedule than we thought, you know, but the job that Lance Leipold has done as head coach there, it's been, you know, next to remarkable considering where this Kansas program has been over the last decade or so. But we couldn't expect no less from Lance. You know, he's a coach that's everywhere he's gone, he's found success. He's been able to get this, you know, being able to get the pieces that he needs to build the foundation. They've got confidence, which is huge for them. And I think that's what's helped kind of pay off for them as well. You know, I also think too, they've got a stellar quarterback in Jalen Daniels and, you know, that's kind of helped propel them into where they're at now. TCU is in the same sort of boat. You know, they're under Sonny Dykes. You know, Sonny knows how to win. He knows how to put up explosive offenses. They've done a really good job. Their defense has been outstanding. And they're right there as well. So, I mean, Big 12 has kind of been flipped, isn't it? You know, with Oklahoma and Texas, you know, at the bottom. And now you see the Kansas States and the TCU is now at the top.
As somebody who covers this sport, does a situation like Kansas, does it surprise you? Because, like, we know that in the end, if you asked an athletic director, which one would you rather have, a football program or a basketball program, they'd all take football. That's where the money is. But, you know, Kansas is such a perennial power in basketball. They're the defending national champs. But are you surprised when a school like Kansas just has decades of, like, where they're not good at all? I mean, I got to go back to Mark Mangino mid-2000s for them to have a winning record.
Yeah, you know, it is sometimes. I mean, sometimes it's poor decisions that come from the athletic directors. You know, this is a school that's had, you know, multiple athletic directors. You know, they've had some turmoil in the athletic department. You know, when you continue to make, you know, when you continue to fire coaches and make coaching changes, it's difficult. It's difficult to win. You know, I mean, think about, you mentioned Mark Mangino. You think about in 2009, when Mangino's last year. Then they go through Turner Gill, Charlie Weiss, David Beatty, you know, Les Miles. I mean, this has just been a litany of coaches that have come through there. It's hard to establish any sort of foundation when you continue to change coaches every 3 years. And that's why I think all of a sudden when you get a coach who really understands how to build from the ground up, that's how you start to see the success happen, as you start seeing the pieces come in place. That's why I think it's important for Kansas to try as best they can to keep Lance, you know, because you want to have some of that continuity. If you can build on that, you can add recruiting classes, and you can, you know, add through the transfer portal now, and you can build on that, you know, kind of foundation. Then all of a sudden, you can have some success for long periods of time. It's great to see. I mean, I'm a big fan of it. I want to see programs like this. You hate to see them go through so long of a period of futility. You want to see them have success. And I think Kansas now is enjoying that. You're seeing sold out stadiums now. And I think that's good for them.
All right, let's go to Baton Rouge, LSU taking on Tennessee. When we all kind of felt like Tennessee, Josh Heupel was building something, and Hendon Hooker was so good last year and not turning the ball over. This team is explosive, but what is LSU? They started the season with a loss to Florida State, and everybody was like, Brian Kelly, welcome to this part of the country. But the reality of it is they've turned it around now. They've won four in a row. They're ranked in the top 25. How good are the Tigers?
You know, they're really good. I think what they've managed to do is they started to figure out what they wanted to be, what their identity was going to be. And what their identity is, it's about defense. You know, this is a much better defense than they were, you know, last year. You know, you're starting to see that every turn. I think Brian Kelly's starting to instill that, you know, a little bit of discipline on this team. They're the top. You know, they're one of the top turnover teams. You know, they create the most turnovers. They have 12 turnover takeaways so far this season. That's been important for them. They were able to bounce back from that, you know, loss to Florida State, and you're starting to see them gain some momentum, you know. And I think that's going to be huge this weekend because, as you mentioned, they're taking on a Tennessee team that loves to put up a lot of points, you know, that wants to, you know, it's the top scoring team in the SEC. You know, they want to kind of push you. They want to go tempo. They want to make sure that, you know, you test the limits of that defense. That's why I think where it's going to be interesting to see the big matchup is can LSU's defense slow down Tennessee, you know, and Josh Heupel and Hendon Hooker, because I think that's where Tennessee wants to make its hay. It wants to go out there and do it with its offense, and I think LSU's going to have a big challenge with that this weekend.
Georgia, the struggle against Missouri, big deal, little deal, no deal?
Somewhat of a, I would say little deal at this point. You know, I think the last two games for Georgia, what's hurt them is just themselves. You know, just self-inflicted mistakes, you know, early turnovers, you know, not taking care of the football, not being as efficient as they were in the first three games. You know, I think that's where you got to get kind of, okay, you know, you need to start, you know, paying attention to some of those details. That can happen when you're a really good team. Sometimes you go into a game and you look at the opponent and you say, well, this opponent's not anywhere near as good as we are. We've got better athletes. We've got more talent. We're going to blow them out. And then you kind of lose sight. You get distracted. And all of a sudden you start making those stupid mistakes. That's really what's happened with Georgia. I don't think it's a case of two teams that have, you know, outplayed Georgia in any sense. I think it's just Georgia's just made mistakes. Now you can't continue that trend. You can't, you know, you can't go into the next game. You can't go into Auburn and think you're going to walk away out of there if you continue to make these mistakes, because that's how something comes back to bite you and eventually you end up losing a game like that.
And so much of college football is perception, right? So if you watch Georgia in a national televised game against Oregon, and then you're looking at them going, well, look what they did to South Carolina, and they shut out Samford, which is expected. But then they give up some points against Kent State, and you're like, wait a minute. And then they get in this battle with Missouri, and then you're like, wait a minute. When this actually will happen to teams in the flow, ebb and flow of a season?
I think the best thing that could happen to Georgia was to get knocked out of the number one spot this week.
Sure.
Because I think, you know, sometimes when you're that, like I said, when you're that kind of confident top team and you got players who are looking around going, well, we're number one, we're great, I think sometimes you need a little bit of just kind of a slap in the face. And I think that's what they got this week with Alabama jumping ahead of them. I think Kirby Smart's the type of coach, though. He's going to use that to his advantage. He's going to say to his players, look, they don't think you're the best team in the country. We know we're the best team in the country. Now go out there and start playing like the best team in the country.
We've always kind of looked at the Pac-12, and you know they've always been sort of this afterthought, unfortunately. They've had champions that are nowhere near the playoff. But this season, USC seems to be really good under Lincoln Riley. UCLA is undefeated. Utah stumbled on the road, but it doesn't seem to be hurting them the way the perception is. What do you make of that conference?
Well, I think that conference is playing its best football it has in a long time.
And long time.
It's great to see. I mean, and you think about it, this is coming off of an offseason where essentially we were looking around wondering if Pac-12 was going to remain solvent, you know,
right,
whether they were going to just break apart, you know. So all of a sudden you come off that, the offseason of turmoil, and you've got a great year of football. I mean, you mentioned, I think USC is the best team right now in the Pac-12 at this point. I think Lincoln Riley's done an amazing job, a lot quicker than I thought they might be. You know, I still think down the road they're going to have some challenges, but you know, Caleb Williams has played really well. Their offenses look good. Their defense has played outstanding. But then you look across the city and you got UCLA, which I don't think anyone thought would have been nearly as strong as they are right now. They've looked really good. Oregon's bounced back from that early loss. You know, they're playing some good football. Utah's probably one of the better defensive teams in the conference, and they've looked good despite their loss. And then Washington, which even though they lost this past weekend to UCLA, they're right there as well in Washington State. So this is a strong conference from top to bottom. Now what they're going to have to do and avoid is what's happened in the past is they just continue to beat up on each other. And I think, you know, when you're looking at the big picture, when you're looking at the college football playoff and you're looking at major bowl games, you know, that's what's hampered the Pac-12 over the last four or five years, is that the good teams just end up losing and getting knocked out of the way by substandard teams. They got to kind of avoid that. They've got to have as many of these top 25 teams as far as they can go if they want to make a sort of impression to get either in the playoff discussion or into the New Year's Six games.
All right, Mississippi State, 4-1, now they're ranked. I kind of thought that they were an under-the-radar team anyway, but I didn't think they'd be ranked as early as they did. Certainly the win against Texas A&M helps. By the way, I feel like Will Rogers has been there forever. I don't know why I feel that way, but I feel like he's been there an eternity. But in the end, Mike Leach, is this surprising?
Yeah, a little bit. I don't want to say surprising, because I think now we're in, what, year three of Mike Leach, and this is kind of what Mike Leach does. You know, everywhere he's gone is, you know, it takes a while, and there's going to be bumps in the road, because I think it's an adjustment to kind of run that air raid offense that he's been running. And then all of a sudden, it's things to start to click, and you're starting to see that now. And you mentioned Will Rogers. I think the thing that's really helped him out is he's had an experienced quarterback. He's had a guy who's been in the system now a couple of years, understands exactly what the air raid offense is. It's not easy. As much as it's explosive and fun to watch, it's not easy to pick up right away. You know, there's a lot of things you have to do. There's a lot of motion. There's a lot of things involved with air raid that I think it takes a bit for a quarterback to kind of lock in. So they've been able to do that. He's been able to recruit now, and he's added some good explosive playmakers on that roster. And I also think defensively they're starting to find ways to stop some teams. So it's going to be interesting this weekend. Again, you know, they're going to have a challenge. And, you know, they got to continue to do what they've been doing. They can't make mistakes. The mistakes have been the things that have kind of hurt them in the past when they've started out really strong. So they've got to avoid those mistakes. They're going to get a challenge over the next 3 or 4 weeks. But then we'll get to really see how good Mississippi State is.
All right, I want to ask you about Clemson real quick, because DJ Uiagalelei, he has Deshaun Watson further back in his shadow, Trevor Lawrence in his shadow, right? Like, there is a system now in place with quarterbacks at Clemson. Is he starting to come into his own? Every time I watch Clemson, I feel like I'm seeing a quarterback that's growing a little bit.
Yeah, I think he is. You know, I think the biggest improvement on this Clemson team over the last, you know, 2 or 3 weeks has been DJ Uiagalelei. You know, I think he's really started to accept the role in the offense. He understands exactly what the offense wants to do. He looks like he's more comfortable in the offense, more confident. I think last year really just eroded his confidence. I think he didn't play well. I think the offense had its struggles. The offensive line wasn't very good. They had a lot of injuries. And that all in turn bundled together really kind of made him, I think it crushed that confidence a little bit. Now he's got that confidence back now. And this is a Clemson team, in my opinion, that looks like this is a playoff bound team. This is a team that looks like it's back to where it was, you know, 2 years ago. And I think Uiagalelei is back to where he was looking like his freshman year. So, you know, again, they've beaten, you know, NC State. They've beaten Wake Forest. They got Florida State next week. You know, I think there's an opportunity really for Clemson to wrap up the Atlantic. If Syracuse stumbles down the road, or if they take care of business with Syracuse later on, they can wrap up the Atlantic and they can win the ACC. When you look at the ACC as a whole, we're back to where we were a couple of years ago when it's Clemson and then everyone else. So
yeah, right.
It's scary to think about it. So it's going to be interesting to see if Clemson can continue that kind of march forward. And if so, if Uiagalelei can kind of continue to show that confidence and growth that he's shown through the last 4 or 5 games.
And doesn't he have isn't there a freshman there, Cabe Klubnik, if I'm not mistaken, is like the hot new product that just arrived in town? It seems like Dabo Sweeney's always got one in the back pantry just ready to take over.
Yes, very much so. You know, Cade's a guy that I think that a lot of people thought about in the beginning, you know, before the season started, to tell, like, well, if DJ doesn't get better, you know, Cade's going to come in and play the game. Well, you know, I think we saw what DJ was able, you know, all of a sudden you respond. You know, we see competitors respond when they feel pressure. I think that's kind of what DJ did. He responded.
Yeah.
I mean, this is typical Dabo. Dabo finds top quarterbacks, top running backs, top guys that he thinks he needs, and he puts them in the system. And it's good to have a year, if you're a true freshman, to have a year to kind of have an understudy. It's exactly what DJ went through with Trevor. You know, I mean, you saw that with Deshaun. I mean, those guys kind of have to sit for a little bit, watch what's going on around them, kind of understand exactly what the Clemson system is and what Dabo Sweeney expects out of them. And then eventually, you know, they're able to take advantage of it and step into that role. And they look more like a seasoned veteran than most guys in that maybe sophomore or junior year.
Matt Marshall, always good talking to you, my friend. Thanks always for joining us. Appreciate it, my man.
No problem. Take care.
You got Matt Marshall, Orlando Sentinel. Find his work there. He's good stuff. He really knows this sport inside out. That's why we have him on all the time, because he's very, very good and knowledgeable as we bounce around the country in college football. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks to Matt Michelle joining us. Hour three coming up. We've got Nate Davis from USA Today. Talk some NFL as we head into week number 5. I got to do that every now and then.
Yeah, it's going too quick, though, by the way.
I go, oh, shoot. Flying by.
Yeah. We knew it was going to happen.
It happens every year.
Happens every year, and then all of a sudden we're like, man, we've already put a month into this.
Absolutely.
Why?
Like, there is going to be a point where we do this all the time in football, right? We have these games, and we go, well, we'll see. And then there is a point where you go,
no, this team stinks. Like, this team is terrible. We've got too many games. It's not a bad game or a bad scheme or injury play. Like, they stink. And that, and then this is around that time. It's the same thing with college football. It's hard to really get a read. Like, when we were talking to Matt Marshall about Mississippi State, Mississippi State's a, you know, a good football team. They've got a great quarterback in Will Rogers who can throw the ball. But in reality, they just beat Texas A&M. That's it. I mean, they didn't really, you know, they beat Memphis and some other teams. But it's too early to look and see a resume of big wins, because you're not playing a lot of big games in the first couple weeks of the season. And in the NFL, even though you're playing, you know, you're not loading up with cupcakes, you load up with whoever you load up with, we still go, yeah, about early October, mid-October is when we get a real good feel. But you can start looking at some teams and going, they're not very good. Like Denver. Denver's just not good. They stink. They stink. There's nothing that, there's no other way to put it. They won two games where they barely escaped Houston, and they won by 1 point in an 11-10 game against San Francisco. They are awful, and that's the way it's going to be the rest of the season. They might turn it around and give you a game or two that's awesome, but unless they get healthy at certain positions. Look, and here's the thing. The problem when people say, like, well, Tim Patrick's been out for the whole year and they just lost Javonte Williams. Yeah, those are important. But one of the reasons that you pay a quarterback $40+ million a year is that they are supposed to try to do something with the weapons that they have, not with the weapons that they were supposed to have. And so you pay these guys money because in the end they're supposed to go, hey, what can we do something else with what we have? We still have professional players on this team. The talent level may have dropped, but we're not putting out amateurs. And go hit them in stride. Go hit them in the numbers. Go make plays. Go do something with your whatever is your strength. Whether you run the ball for first down or you find a way to stay alive in a play. And Russell Wilson's not doing that. It's just injuries are bad and he stinks. And that's the way the Broncos are right now.